Coming up on This Week in Computer Hardware, RX 480, we have benchmarks and news of a 490 and a GTX 1060, Huawei's MateBook, Olympics in VR, and more. It's all coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 370, recorded June 30th, 2016. AMD's RX 480 is fast. Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch weekly show that aims to bring you the most useful, most informative, most engaging, and occasionally the most frustrating news in PC and mobile hardware. I'm Patrick Norton, joined as always by Mr. Ryan Schrout, who tells me I could have bought that GPU yesterday.
You could have. It was definitely for sale yesterday. Not today. Yesterday.
This is like talking to surfers at the shore. Oh, brah! It was epic yesterday. It's double over Smurf now, but triple overhead, peaked, nice curl, but you weren't here. So I bring this up because RX 480s were available at MSRP for at least several minutes, perhaps even an hour or two yesterday, yesterday being the 29th of June, the launch date for the RX 480. You have the full review. We do not, however, have reviews, or you do not have review units of the RX 470 yet.
No, or 460 for that matter.
Or pricing for the 470.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't really pay much attention to what the schedules were for those products because I didn't get them, and I was kind of slammed with the testing of the one product I did get. So were there other reviews posted?
No. As far as I know, there are no 470s anywhere in review.
Right, so I didn't miss something dramatic.
No. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, you know, they talked a bunch about the 480. Then AMD talked a bunch about the 470 and how the 470 was going to be VR ready, which basically makes it a 970, which is supposed to sell. Well, the 970 still selling for almost 150 to 180 more than what the 470 should be selling for. But let us talk about the 480, which is already sold out, but is a wonderful alternative should it come back in stock at its MSRP. For at this point, I'm going to say the 970 and bordering on the 980. Is that aggressive?
That is aggressive. I would say this is much closer to 970 than 980 in terms of performance. It is essentially equivalent to the Radeon R9 390 in terms of performance. And it ranges from being like 10% slower than the 970 in Grand Theft Auto 5 to being 40% faster in one case, which I think is the DX12 implementation of Hitman. So there's a pretty wide variance there. It's an impressive card. So we knew a little bit about specs. You can see on the specs table on the first page of our review. The interesting thing that we didn't know about how Polaris works and how AMD is kind of pushing this stuff is on the clock speeds. If you see there, since the introduction of GPU Boost way back in the day, the GTX 680 from NVIDIA, the idea of a single clock speed rating for graphics cards started to become less meaningful because they had a base clock and they had a boost clock. AMD with Polaris now has true adaptive clocking built into their architecture. So they too as well have two clocks and they call them base and boost as well. But they're actually they have different meanings, of course, because you don't want to make things simplified. What AMD calls the base clock speed, which is listed on that table as a 1,120 megahertz, is the typical clock speed that you will see in a variety of games, in a variety of resolutions, in a variety of synthetic tests, right? This is kind of what they have tested and analyzed to be the typical clock speed for that particular GPU. And then they list a boost clock, which is not on that table, but it's 1266. And that is actually the maximum clock speed you will see at the highest voltage state if in a perfect scenario where the GPU is running very cool, the case is running very cool. And, you know, I would say in general, it's probably not, you're never going to hit 1266 with a reference cooler. But when we get some aftermarket coolers, you may see some of that being the case. There's 4 gig and 8 gig variants that have slightly different memory speeds. 150 watt TDP and $199 price tag for the 4 gig variant and $239 for the 8 gig variant. So specification wise, it's a pretty impressive product for the price point. And yeah, you know, competing wise with the R9 390 and the GTX 270. Now, obviously, prices on the GTX 970 have come down a lot just because of the Pascal launch and then all the run up to this release of AMD's Polaris architecture. So at the time they announced the RX 480, the GTX 970 was still $320 or $330, I think.
At least.
So this was a $120 advantage in terms of its performance per dollar, right?
Now it's nearly a $60 advantage.
yeah. Things have gone down. We knew this would be the case. NVIDIA's not dumb. And they're also, you know, NVIDIA's kind of waiting to, they want to get through stock on a bunch of stuff because they have, you know, their next generation parts to think about as well. So on the last page there, we do have like pricing performance per dollar comparisons in a graph format, if you like to kind of try to see everything all at once. And you can see there's actually some actually go down to the second graph on that page, because the in our comparisons we included the R9 380 and the GTX 960, but they're so far out of class in terms of performance that including them in that data kind of skews it quite a bit, I would say. But if you look there, you get an idea of the blue bar on the left of each set is the new RX 480. Then you have the R9 390 in the orange and the GTX 970 in yellow. And clearly, even with the price reductions on the GTX 970, the RX 480 is the better value in terms of performance per dollar than any of those cards. And that's what they were going for. That's their goal. Their goal is to gain market share. Their goal is to get these cards into people's hands. And that's the way you do it, right? You can do it in performance per dollar. That's what people really pay attention to in regards to new product launches like this.
It's impressive. I mean, I 3 months ago, I don't see you and I having a conversation that ever leads to us like, well, you know, I bet this summer AMD is going to drop something. It's going to completely blow the 970 out of the water for over $120 less when it ships. at this point, you know, you could buy a 970. But I think it makes a lot more sense to either wait for a 1070 or to after the prices have dropped down, or to wait for an RX 480 after the prices have dropped down. And what's really frustrating, above and beyond the fact that, okay, so the 1080, the 480 is now well over MSRP. I want to say 70, 40. It's close to $110 over MSRP if you're up on Amazon.com. The GTX 1080 and 1070 are still ridiculously expensive. The Founders Edition, and I'm not a particular, at this point, I find the Founders Edition really irritating. Like, let's do an early Founders Edition release so you can pay an extra $100 because we like money. The businessman part of me is like, yeah. Didn't even have to paint it pink or put a decal or a game in the box. My crankiness about the Founders Edition of the 1080 and 1070 aside, a GTX 1080 is selling for upwards of $800 now, which puts it almost $400 over MSRP. And now, I go to PC Per this morning and, I'm catching up on things. And Sebastian's got a write-up that we have a leak of a GTX 1060. Which may or may not be the more direct competitor for the RX 480, and will certainly probably stick a fork in the GTX 970. And then, as if that's not enough, we turn around, and Sebastian also has a post of this giant collection of AMD's current We're in the Game promotion, which apparently gives us a sneak peek at the RX 490 graphics card, at least in name, and Bristol Ridge APUs. So now we've got something that may be pushing towards the 980 level of performance from AMD, presumably at a competitive price point. And remember how we told you there's no new GPU or CPUs coming till next year? Well, technically there is, but there are some APUs coming out. In the Bristol Ridge lineup, which is, gee whiz.
And it's clearly a busy summer
It's a
for graphics, right? I mean,
it's going to be awesome once the supply is there. But right now, it sucks buying a GPU. If you're HTC Vive or you're buying an HTC Vive or an Oculus Rift or you're upgrading your monitor, this sucks. Like, you know, I'm looking over here, you know, it's like, oh, there's a 950 I just bought like 6 weeks ago. Great. I particularly need that much more than the 950 for the 1080p monitor that's attached to, but you know, for that money, like, you know, it's you know, I'm frustrated because I look at this and I'm like, okay, or maybe I should be excited because, you know, there pretty much are no serious gaming CPUs or for that matter, work CPUs, desktop CPUs coming out until CES 2017, pretty much the earliest, unless somebody blows a gasket at Intel, which I really don't see happening, which means if you want to build a VR rig, if you want to build a gaming machine, if you want to build anything that requires 3D graphics, just sit tight and wait for the prices on these GPUs to settle.
Yeah, I think this at this time period for release, even honestly still in the 1080 and 1070, and obviously for the RX 480 that launched yesterday, don't buy it unless it's at a sticker price, right? You know, we were showing on the video, you know, prices at Amazon, right? And Amazon allows third-party sellers. They're very frequently taken advantage of. You'll see the RX 480 selling for $100-something over its price point, which totally defeats the purpose of that particular product, right? The whole idea of that product is it is a price-conscious debate. But if you use nowinstock.net or some other website like that lets you track for that type of stuff, you can find them if you're paying attention. You just have to be quick, right? So if you're sitting at a computer all day, which probably a lot of people are, leave up the nowinstock.net page on in your browser in a separate tab. And it will, you can set it to even like beep, audibly beep when something goes in stock. You can click through and see if you could pick it up. It's not as easy as it should be. Right. It's very frustrating for people who are trying to buy those. But there you go right now. Look, there's RX 480s. It says, looks like there's two in stock. One at Best Buy and two different models at Best Buy on BestBuy.com. So those weren't there when I looked an hour ago, right? So that's good news, right? And tools like this at least help you alleviate some of the frustration of sitting there banging your head on the wall, hitting F5 over and over again, or looking through Amazon. So that's what I would keep in mind. The 1080, 1070 stuff is interesting. The 480 availability is interesting as well, because AMD was one of the many people coming to me saying, oh my God, aren't you going to talk about the shortages of 1080s and 1070s, right? Like how dare they release a product with nothing? Yeah.
The 8 GB Radeon RX 480 that was for sale for $250 at Best Buy is already sold out.
Yeah, I got to refresh that page.
And the page opened, and as I went to, and it was available, and as I hit the button. I think the 4 GB version just wiped out too.
That sucks.
So 1080 and 1070. I'm sorry. I thought that was so amusing. No. Like literally, like you saw it. I hit the button within 30 seconds and it was gone already.
Yeah, that's yes. You're going to have to fight that battle. but, you know, AMD was one of the people trying to be critical of the status of the 1080s and 1070s. Well, meanwhile, promising us at the media that they were going to have plenty of RX 480s available for stock. And then when they sold that, by the time our stream was over yesterday with Raja here in studio, you know, the 480s were sold out on Newegg and sold out on Amazon. And then it became they're just such great sellers. We can't keep them in stock. So the argument can be made both directions. No one will tell me exactly how many cards they had available and how many they're doing sell through. That's just proprietary information they don't want to share. But
yeah. Well, and it's also, I mean, you know, we talked about this a few weeks ago. It's like, yeah, you know, there will never, like Microsoft and Sony will never build enough PlayStations or Xboxes ever. Unless
especially for day one.
Yeah, for day one. They will never have that because they think it sounds so cool. Demand was so high, we couldn't fulfill it. We're making them around the clock. So if you see one for sale, better buy it now or you could be waiting for months. So they create, you know, they create this shortage, legitimate or artificial. You know, it's not like AMD doesn't need the revenue. But the longer they string this up, the higher that it's frustrating. It is really frustrating if you're looking to buy a gaming or build or buy a gaming machine right now, unless you want to either eat the cost of additional. Now I want to go look to see if do any of the major PC builders have gaming systems with 1070s or 1080s?
Yeah, I saw a post on Twitter from Origin PC yesterday with like 100 GTX 1080s in boxes that they were, you know, getting ready to sell systems based on. And a lot of the stock is going to those places, but I still think the vast majority of sell through is actually in the channel to direct to consumers as opposed to through system integrators. It's a tough position to be in, and trust me, NVIDIA would love to have more cards to sell, and AMD would love to have more cards to sell while excitement is high. And then you mentioned the GTX 1060 stuff. Like, right. AMD would definitely like to have a whole bunch of RX 480s to sell to people before the 1060 is announced or shown or reviews come out or whatever it is, right? Clearly, that's a fairly believable picture that leaked out. The question is, when will it actually show up? When will NVIDIA come in and rain on AMD's parade to some degree? Try to take away some of their thunder. And to be fair, we don't even know what price point that's going to come in at or performance. It could be a $250. It could be a $299 card. If it's $299, it's really still not competing with the RX 480 in terms of the same segment. You'd have to wait for like a 1050 or something like that. But chances are it's going to be like in the 250 range, if I were to guess, based on the divisions and how they've worked in the past. Where will it be in terms of performance, right? And one thing I think that I want people to take away from the RX 480 review in itself is that if you look at it, it didn't turn out to be as power efficient as Pascal. If you look at it, it has 150-watt TDP, the RX 480 does, which is the same TDP as the GTX 1070. Right, the brand new GTX 1070. And clearly the GTX 1070 is a big step ahead of the RX 480 in terms of performance. It's on par with the GTX 980 Ti even, right? So AMD has a big improvement from their own architecture to architecture, performance efficiency improvements. But in terms of did their move to 14 nanometer suddenly jump them up to be on the same performance efficiency as NVIDIA, with Pascal on its 16 nanometer, the answer to that is no. Does it matter at the end of the day? Less so than NVIDIA would like to believe, because I still believe that, you know, price per frame or performance per dollar, whatever you want to call it, is still the most important metric. It's still king metric of this field. So it's better, but it's not. It didn't blow the world set the world on fire, which actually, AMD has talked a lot about Polaris being inside gaming notebooks. And that's the one area where performance per watt means more than performance per dollar. If Pascal still has the advantage there, then AMD may not be able to make the headroom into the notebook space that they kind of put on that they would be able to do. So we'll see how that turns out, I guess.
Interesting.
Yeah.
4 gigabytes or 8 gigabytes, should you find a 480 for sale?
It depends on how price sensitive you are. I think the 4 gig card is going to be just fine. There's only one game really where I would think in my test suite at 1080p or 2560 by 1440 where 8 gigs is going to make a noticeable performance difference compared to 4 gigs. Rise of the Tomb Raider is that particular title at fairly high image quality settings. Most of the time, I think 4 gigs is going to be plenty, especially considering the performance levels you're going at. 1080p, 25 by 14 at the stretch end, you're not getting into 4K. You're not going to do 3440 by 1440 with this card. So 4 gigs is probably fine. However, I think the vast majority of reference cards that are coming out are going to be 8 gigabyte based. So that's probably what the majority of stock will end up being, is the 8 gigabyte card. And for $40, getting a little bit of future proofness out of it, and the memory is running at higher speeds as well, is okay. If I had both options and somebody was just going to do 1080p gaming, I'd probably say get the 4 gig card, you'll be fine. But either way,
it'll be just fine. Oh my goodness. I am curious to see how the Huawei MateBook held up. That's all I'm going to say, man. I don't know how I feel about this laptop, because, or maybe I'm excited about this laptop, but, you know, a denial of surface attack, first
you like
of all,
that?
We have pun issues around here. but the MateBook, it's a Core M processor. It's thin. It's fanless. So it's going to get its ass kicked performance-wise by anything running a Core i3, a 5i, or a 5.7, which would pretty much be all the Surface Books. the flip side, it's not. I don't even see it having much of a battery advantage because they're all running a 4.5-watt TDP. What's the story with this, man? I mean, it's super svelte, 12-inch screen, 2160 by 1440 IPS. Yep. Prices are running from $700 to $1,600, maxing out at like 8 gigabytes of RAM and 512 gigabytes of storage. It's MIMO, which makes me giggle, because I'm not sure what you would do with 512 gigabytes of storage. It requires 802.11ac. For some reason I saw MIMO and thought multi-user MIMO, but 802.11ac MIMO makes perfect sense for a mobile device these days.
You want it to be able to communicate inside that network, right? And not screw up the rest of your network. It's a really good looking device, first of all. Okay. Like it's very thin. It doesn't slap you in the face with logos. There's no LED lights on it. I mean, that's for a complete Windows 10 PC to be that thin. And fanless is actually really impressive. It is Core M based, so it's like you said, it's not going to blow you away. Keep in mind that the base model Surface Pro 4 uses a Core M3 processor as well. So it's that is on the same performance scale here. It's about $200 less expensive for the exact same spec on the bottom end of the Huawei MateBook as compared to the Surface Pro 4. The model that I had for review was the 4 gigs, 128 gig model. If I were to purchase one of these myself, I'd probably spend a little bit more and get the 8 gigs of memory, 256 gigs of storage. The additional memory is just always useful when you have slower processing, right? The additional memory gives you a little bit of a boost in terms of not having to move shuffle data back and forth quite as often. I actually am really, really impressed with the device that you get. The screen is gorgeous. Like the viewing angles, you can kind of even see here on our stream, like the viewing angles on it are really, really, really good. Cool. Very clear, very bright. Forgot what percentage of sRGB color they had into it. The accessories you get with it, again, this is basically a competitor to the Surface Pro 4, right? In terms of it's a tablet, and then you add things to it, like the keyboard dock you see there. It's got a backlit keyboard with pretty good key travel on it, and I actually typed the whole review for it on this and came away pretty impressed. The trackpad is nice. It uses a Pogo plug for connection, so it's not Bluetooth or anything like that. You don't have to worry about connectivity issues that way. It is the downside to it. Yeah, right there. That shot there shows you it uses like the origami style, like iPad cover methods, right? It uses magnets. It actually held up pretty well in use. The downside is that there's only two positions for the screen, right? The stylus works really well. That loop right there that the stylus is in is my least favorite thing about the entire MateBook ecosystem. Let me show you why. So the loop here is attached to the back of the Portfolio keyboard, which I have the tablet sitting out of it. That's why it's so thin. And so you would think the idea is that you have this on there. It's attached there. And when you want to use it, you just pull the pin out. Oh, wait. Oh, it's loosening up. There it goes. Oh, okay. So the problem is the magnet is not strong enough to hold it. So if I wanted to remove the pin, basically almost all the time the loop comes off as well.
Right.
So you might run into some lost pin issues. Just some more permanent attachment for the stylus would be good. Performance on it was like for browsing, email, basic word processing, productivity, Excel. You know, I did Photoshop on it, that type of stuff. It works fine. If you're doing a lot of heavy filters, if you're doing video editing, obviously it's going to be a stretch to be a comfortable processing environment, right? And for me, if I wanted to make this my everyday machine, I'm a little worried about that because I tend to have a ton of tabs open all the time. I tend to have Photoshop open all the time. I'm always kind of editing images and stuff for work. So I'll probably still adopt this as kind of like my semi-permanent machine on the next work trip just to see how that goes. But I really like it. Battery life is pretty good. It's only 5.5 hours in our test. Our test is pretty strenuous in terms of battery life. So it's definitely less than like an XPS 13 where you're going to get something like 7.5 to 8 hours. But considering how thin it is, I think that's actually pretty impressive. It's actually better than the Surface Pro 4 in that regard. Okay. But that was with a Core i5 processor. I really like this device. It's Huawei's first PC. They worked very closely with Intel. Intel needed kind of like a flagship. Let's show off how we can make a thin, fanless, sexy tablet, 2-in-1 convertible, whatever the hell they call them these days. And this has it. The downsides, it only has one I/O connection other than your headphone jack, which is a Type-C connector, which means if you want to plug in a standard USB device, you have to carry with you. They give you a... It is a Type-C to micro USB cable that's about 3 inches long. And then they give you a micro to full-size USB converter, right? And so that's how you get your full-size normal USB port on it if you don't buy the dock. There's a dock that you can get with it that I think is like $80 that gives you two USB ports, Ethernet, HDMI, VGA, power pass-through. Yeah, that guy right there. And that's pretty handy. It's a little bit oddly shaped and kind of built, but it does get the job done. I still really like it. But there are enough when you get to devices that are this slim, you know, so right. They're super light, but they have smallish batteries and low connectivity. You have sacrifices you have to make, and everybody has to make their own decisions on whether or not they think that's worth it. Did you get a chance to play with it at all yet at any point?
I have not. That's why I was really curious. I'd also like to apologize at this point for my concerns about Huawei's first laptop build. It sounds pretty impressive.
Yeah, so. for their first go at it, it's actually really, really good. And you know, you've used some of their phones, I'm sure. Like, they build high-quality product, and this feels like a high-quality product. Doesn't feel like, oh, it's a Chinese company's first entry into the PC market, right? Like, it's a well-done device. And they had worked really closely with Intel. So you know that from a hardware standpoint, it's going to be as optimized as you can. There is no bloatware at all anywhere on this either. It's perfectly clean in terms of pre-installed software. And that's awesome. Wherever you buy it. Like Microsoft Store has their Signature Edition stuff. But if you buy it at Best Buy or Amazon or whatever, it will apparently be the same software configuration. So,
sweet.
Yeah, I like it.
I'm impressed. Yay, Huawei. That's pretty cool, actually. Oh, my goodness. Oculus backs down on their hardware check. This was kind of interesting when Scott wrote this up on PC Per. Basically, Oculus Store games would not run without an Oculus Rift being connected. Motherboard, who is slowly but surely the crazy kids from Vice, are getting better and better and tighter in their tech coverage. But had a quote from an Oculus spokesperson who said, "We won't use hardware checks as part of DRM on the PC in the future." That was there to block games from being run inside of an HTC Vive, which was... Basically, you could run a tool called Revive with the HTC Vive to play the Oculus Rift games. Scott notes that, quote, "Oculus will continue to develop their DRM itself, of course. They have also been approaching developers to make Oculus-exclusive content, and he expects that will continue." So this is frustrating, right? Because VR is in its infancy. It's expensive. There's not a huge amount of games. There's not a huge amount of talent for building, or I shouldn't even say games. I should say experiences. And to have, what basically amounts to a format or a console war is a little frustrating for early adopters. So we will see what happens with Oculus and HTC Vive moving forward. And of course, you know, the PlayStation VR, which may or may not be a vomit fest, depending on whether or not game developers decide to sort of hit the 90 frames per second refresh rate that everybody else in the industry thinks is mandatory for having a successful experience versus Sony, who apparently is like, 60, whatever. Do what you can. I find that a little nerve-wracking. I was talking to our intern in the office yesterday, and I was like, what technology do you want that you can't afford? Or, like, you know, what kind of cheap technology would you want to review? And her response was, you know, I want an HTC Vive that I can afford. And I laughed about that because I was like, well, have you played around? It's like, yeah, Cardboard was cool until I used an HTC Vive, which made me laugh because Variety has a write-up. Now, the Olympics will be in VR. That NBC will present 85 hours of virtual reality content on Samsung devices. So Cardboard is huge, people. And in some ways, Cardboard may be the biggest installed base for virtual reality right now, or certainly the lowest barrier to entry. So I thought that was highly amusing. Olympic Broadcasting Services will include the opening and closing ceremonies, men's basketball, including the semifinals and finals, gymnastics, track and field, beach volleyball, diving, boxing, and fencing, along with highlight packages of those sports. So basically all the stuff that's, you know, generally successful on broadcast. Yeah. You know, hopefully this does better than the 3D TV deal with Panasonic at the 2012 games.
I actually, like, every time a new technology comes out like this for a broadcast, sure, I'm always on the wrong end of it. Like, I don't own Samsung Gear VR. The Masters or some golf tournament recently broadcast in 4K on DirecTV as well? I don't have DirecTV anymore. I do remember back in the day.
You've got, like, 9 4K monitors within the surrounding. I know. You know, if we drew a 3-meter circle around you, there'd be at least 5 or 6, you know, 4K monitors there and all the latest GPUs.
Getting close. But you got to have the signal from somewhere, right? So all these kind of semi-exclusives, you know, like, oh, it's only available through DirecTV, it's only available on Samsung devices, is really annoying. Actually, Ken had an example of this yesterday where apparently Amazon streaming video will offer some HDR content now, I guess starting this week. And Ken just bought a new TV that happened to have HDR capability built into it, but he didn't have a way to get the Amazon, like, only LG devices that with the updated Amazon player could stream the HDR content yet or something like that. And it's just like, you know, his was a Samsung or his was a Vizio TV. And none of the Kindle TV, Fire TV devices actually had support for HDR output yet anyway. So it didn't matter what the app had support for. And I just want things to work across all of them so people can actually see this stuff and try it. And everybody wants to sign a marketing deal to tie it to one particular platform for X number of hours, years, days. And it's annoying.
Why you be a hater, man? People need to eat. Large corporations need to eat too, dude.
Fair.
How do you think this is being paid for? Love?
That's true.
Love doesn't work on Wall Street, man. Meanwhile, Google and Qualcomm team up to make your Project Tango easier on your CPU. So augmented reality only takes up 10% of the CPU because they're offloading work to other chips. This is a great read on Ars Technica by Ron Amadeo. It's pretty interesting, right? So the only way to get it at the consumer non-dev board counter dev device is the Lenovo Fab 2 Pro, which we got hands-on with a couple weeks ago. It's pretty interesting. No additional Movidius computer vision chip. And all the augmented reality processing runs, Mr. Amadeo writes, on the Qualcomm Snapdragon 652 system on a chip. So basically, there's this sort of little corner of the CPU, the Tango Sensor Fusion Core, that pulls together image processing, feature tracker on the DSP, and sensor processing on the sensor hub, which pulls together the gyro, the accelerometer, the fisheye camera, the rear RGB camera, and the depth sensor, mashes that all together and does it so that the CPU doesn't get completely overwhelmed by the processing. So,
yeah,
it's interesting.
So. Yeah, it actually sounds really interesting what they're doing and how they're dividing up the work across all those different processors. And hey, we get some credence and usage out of the idea of heterogeneous computing in some place, even if it's not where we thought it was going to be three, four, 5 years ago when the term first started to hit us. So,
oh my goodness, we wait with bated breath. Because I have children, I had to mention this. Bose, not my favorite brand. Great noise canceling headphones, although I personally cannot use noise canceling headphones. It makes me feel like my head's about to collapse. But if you are buying noise canceling headphones, it's about the only Bose product I would recommend. Price performance rise. They've come up with a kit for kids to build their own Bluetooth speaker. And it's really, really cool because it looks like they actually build components of the speaker together, and then there's a PCB and the wiring. But I love the fact that they're like essentially building a speaker, like the actual physical, you know, the thing that vibrates and moves air so you can hear it. Requires an iPhone, an iOS device for sort of the instructions and the interactive stuff. But they did a really good job building this big board where the amplifier and the controller and the Bluetooth and the DSP and the power are all kind of mapped out so they can see what an actual PCB looks like. My only downside is that it's a $150 project for your 8-year-old or 7-year-old. So it's a little pricey, but it is really cool if you have the money. Designed for kids 8 and older. I don't think it's available from anywhere except for build.bose.com. But on one hand, it was really neat that they're doing this. And on the other hand, I was like, wow, that's kind of expensive for a Bluetooth speaker. But it's, you know, that board on there. I'm also like wondering how long it's going to be before somebody replaces the speaker that came in the box with something that works better. But we wait with bated breath.
Yeah, that's a cool project.
Yeah, it is a really cool project. But, you know, parts-wise, we're looking at about $25 in parts, I think. I could be wrong. But that board's custom. You know, I shouldn't harp on them too hard, but... you can get a Bose SoundLink mini Bluetooth speaker too for $180, you know, or you can buy something that's going to probably sound significantly less awesome for $150, but you get to build it yourself. I love the fact that they laid the board out the way they did. I love the idea of the LEDs. I think kids are going to love putting this together. I just wish they'd made it a little less expensive. So... But then again, I think almost everything Bose makes should be a lot less expensive. So the fact that this should be a little less expensive may be a big step for Bose. So go Bose. BCPro.com is the place to go to find all the Ryan Trout. You can tweet your questions at Ryan Trout or at Patrick Norton. We every time we think things are going to slow down for the summer, they jam up and get crazy again. So I am predicting absolutely nothing at this point. In terms of things.
Good plan.
Oh, my goodness. We just started doing a MAME build. It's my first MAME build in forever. And it was crazy for me how much the MAME emulators have changed and the front ends for them since the last time I built a MAME machine. So we're doing a MAME build for the patrons on tech things. Shannon got hands-on with the OnePlus 3. If you are looking for a new Android phone, it pretty much offers flagship, maybe not the best camera, but for $400, you're getting flagship level performance and a Snapdragon 820, some solid battery life, and no stupid waiting list to get an invitation to buy one, which is a big jump for OnePlus. But we got to review that on Tech Thing this week. And a $18 piece of software that in theory should replace the password or any lost password, or recover a password, or just wipe out the password on any Windows box you plug it into. At least if you can boot from a USB or a CD-ROM drive. So, if you're
interesting,
if you're a sysadmin or into security, and that makes your skin crawl, you might want to make sure your BIOS is locked down, but make sure you don't lose your BIOS password. That's painful.
Yeah. Yeah.
So outside of the 470, the 1060, the 1090, the new AMD APUs, which we may or may not see anytime soon, is there anything you can tell us about that's coming up on PC Per?
I literally just before the show started, I published a story that looks at some power consumption issues maybe surrounding the RX 480. That maybe it's drawing too much power to be advertised at its 150 watt TDP. So that might be something you're interested in. We can talk more about it next week once I've had time to actually talk with AMD about what we found.
And you have an interview.
Yes.
From the launch yesterday.
Actually, that was yesterday. We actually had the chief senior vice president and chief architect of the Radeon Technologies Group in Kentucky for about, let's see, he was here for about 8 hours in Kentucky before flying out again. Came in studio, did an interview. It was actually a really, really good talk. If you're interested in the graphics market, we talk a little bit about the RX 40 specifically, but much more in general terms about what the direction that Radeon brand is going, things like multi-GPU, things like performance per dollar versus performance per watt, how they manage that. How they plan on competing in the higher end spaces with NVIDIA in the not too distant future. All that type of stuff is really covered in that. And I think it's an hour and 4 minutes. And I think it's very dense with solid information that if anybody likes the, doesn't just like the products, but likes to hear about how products are made and what the decisions go behind making them, I think you'll really enjoy it. So that's definitely worth taking a look at.
Cool. That's about it for this episode of This Week in Computer Hardware. If you're new to the show, please go over to twit.tv/twitch. You'll find all our older episodes and information on how to subscribe. For more of Mr. Shrout, head to pcpur.com. For more of me, head to techthing.com or avxl.com. It's the show I do about home theater with my boy Robert Heron. We want to thank you so much for listening to this episode of This Week in Computer Hardware and say, hey, I'm Patrick Gordon.
I'm Ryan Shrout.
We'll see you next week on Twitch.